Ability Beat. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with parent and advocate Michelle Westmus on the importance of building community connections for people with disabilities. But first, disability news for the week of May 5th, 2025. President Donald Trump wants to cut $163 billion in federal spending next year, potentially zeroing out key disability programs, some of which are already pausing services because they're running out of money. The White House released a budget summary reflecting $183 billion in cuts. The skinny budget asks Congress to cut funding for non-defense related discretionary spending by almost 23% starting in October. This does not include mandatory programs like Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, but the summary doesn't give details about how disability programs would be impacted, though a document from Health and Human Services shows that the administration wants to eliminate funding for protection and advocacy agencies, state councils on developmental disabilities, the Lifespan Respite Program, and University Centers on Developmental Disabilities, among other programs. The targeted disability programs are contained within the purview of the Administration for Community Living, which HHS said in March that it will close. Many developmental disability programs are already being affected due to delayed distribution of funds that were authorized by Congress in March. In recent weeks, several states have already reduced or eliminated some services because they're running out of money. The groups are all federally mandated protection and advocacy organizations, or PNAs, which exist in each state to provide free legal and advocacy services to individuals with disabilities. According to Eric Buhlman, Deputy Executive Director for Public Policy at the National Disability Rights Network, quote, ultimately all PNAs will be affected because they will run out funding to pay staff and services, end quote. The president's budget proposal also asks for cuts to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and the National Institutes of Health, among others. It also asks Congress to consolidate housing assistance for people with disabilities with other programs and cut their funding. Funding for the Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights would be chopped by 35%. Alison Barkoff, a professor at George Washington University who led the Administration for Community Living under the Biden administration, said, quote, all of the uncertainty around funding has meant that disability programs are having to spend precious time and resources on contingency planning instead of focusing on supporting people with disabilities and their families. Programs that are critical to people with disabilities and their families are at serious risk now and heading into the end times. As HHS starts their work on addressing autism, many leaders, experts, advocacy groups, and researchers have not been contacted by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. In addition, the Interagency Autism Coordinating Committee, a panel comprised of government officials and members of the autism community responsible for coordinating federal autism efforts, has not met since January. In April, Secretary of Health and Human Services Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced that his agency had, quote, launched a massive testing and research effort that would involve hundreds of scientists from around the world, and that by September we will know what has caused the autism epidemic, end quote. More recently, the director of the National Institutes of Health shared their plans to gather private medical records from federal and commercial sources. HHS is to was to clarify that they were developing a, quote, secure data repository that will enable researchers to analyze large-scale de-identified data and not creating an autism registry to track individuals using personal data, end quote. The lack of communication has led to questions about how studies will be conducted and how data will be used and protected, advocates said. It also prompted concerns that people may shy away from seeking an autism diagnosis or services. And finally, on a more positive note, a Disney movie about a sixth grader with cerebral palsy who's nonverbal and uses a wheelchair will receive a special honor from the Emmy Awards this week. The program, called Out of My Mind, which was released last year, is one of six programs named to the Television Academy Honors this week. The awards are given annually by the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, the organization responsible for the Emmy Awards, to recognize programming that raises awareness about complex issues facing society. Out of My Mind stars Phoebe Ray Taylor as Melody Brooks, a girl who's had limited opportunities because of her disability. When a young educator taps into Melody's potential, she starts to participate in mainstream schooling and rises to the occasion. The film features Melody using different augmentative and alternative communication systems, and the cast includes other actors with various disabilities as well. Jennifer Aniston portrays Melody's inner voice. And that's the news for this week.
Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see? When you're hugging with your baby, last row in the balcony. Well, there's Technicolor and the CinemaScope, a cast out of Hollywood, and the popcorn from the candy stand makes it all seem twice as good.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I'm joined today by my good friend Michelle Westmus, who has such a long biography that I couldn't possibly give her all the credit she's due today. But know that Michelle is one of the leading advocates in the state of Illinois and has been for a number of years. And I've worked with Michelle since, how old was Bradley when we started? Second grade, maybe kindergarten,
and maybe preschool kindergarten.
And he is now how old?
27.
Yeah, it's been a long time, but it's been a great adventure. Welcome to the program, Michelle. So
thank you for having me. Since
I didn't introduce you very well, why don't you do a quick synopsis of who you are and talk a little bit about your experience with Bradley?
Okay, so I was a teacher when my second child, Bradley, was born with Kabuki syndrome. And so I found myself unable to head back to the classroom. And like so many of us parents, I decided I would work in the disability field. I realized there was a lot of knowledge I needed to raise this particular kid. And the best way I could get it was if my job was surrounded by all that information. So I was lucky enough to work for the Family Support Network of the Arc of Illinois, and then with the Association of Microboards and Cooperatives, and I worked with the Illinois School for the Deaf Outreach and Hearing and Vision Connections. And so I had a lot of opportunities for statewide advocacy, which allowed me to know who's who and what's what, and put Bradley in a position to have the best life possible.
And so after all your experiences, let's talk about what you found that has been most effective in helping him.
Well, I think I remember working with the legislative and policy advocacy with the Arc of Illinois and how very frustrating that was, right? Because it feels like progress is moving at a snail's pace. And then I also remember going to the State of Minnesota website, Parallels in Time. You know that website where you can go through the entire of disability history from ancient times, right?
Right.
And I remember thinking, you know, we really are making a lot of progress. Like, there's no better time to live with a disability than now. But in our lifetime, it feels really slow. And then when we were able to work with the directly with families, with the Association of Microboards and Cooperatives, I think that's what really changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
I had people like you and many others from the time Bradley was very little teaching me about inclusion and possibilities and belonging and all of that. But then when we really got deeper into person-centered thinking, that really made a difference. And I think that that is where people can find, I'm thinking of the words, it's like a mindset shift that has to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is, because I know so many parents out there who think that they need to live one day longer than their
right.
child with a disability, because they're the only ones that can be there that will protect them and make sure that they get their needs met. And, you know, all the things that parents worry about, usually until their child turns 18. But
right.
for a family member, a parent of a person with a disability that's more significant, it's much more challenging and much more worrisome, right?
Exactly. And one of my most recent opportunities was I started a community college program for young adults with developmental disabilities.
Oh, yeah, you left
and,
that one out, Michelle.
Yeah, I left that one out. That was kind of big. And I think, you know, when students would come and we would start talking about planning for the future, many of them just, you know, I'm going to live with my mom and dad forever. And it is like that can't be your plan, because mom and dad's forever is not as long as yours.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not going to work. Like, that just isn't going to work. So we've got to think of something else. And I know nobody wants to think about it. It's terrifying.
It is terrifying. But
we
have to think about it. You have to think about what's going to happen if my family member with a disability does live with me, and I'm planning on being around forever to take care of them, and all of a sudden you're gone.
Right. And it's not just that we're gone. It's just that we're incapacitated for a week.
Well, that's
true. Like, if I come down with wicked COVID for a week, what's going to happen to my person whose life revolves around me? That can't happen. And I remember recognizing that Bradley's life can't be limited to what I can create. I'm one person.
Yeah.
And I am not, I mean, I'm pretty darn fabulous, as you know, but Bradley's life should not be limited to what I can make happen, you know? And I think, so one thing I tell people that I've discovered, we really have to work hard to recognize that we don't know what our loved one with disabilities can do, because we have no historical opportunity for anyone to show us. People with disabilities have always been isolated, no expectations, nothing. So we have to give each person the tools, the support, and the opportunities to show us what they can do. We have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And even, you know, with Bradley's syndrome, you know, if we look at the generations of kids, you can see that medical advances have made better possibilities for people just health-wise.
But in society, that's not necessarily the case. The medical breakthroughs
right.
are awesome, but people's expectations of those with disabilities limits them to group homes, sheltered workshops, day programs, isolated settings like that, where they don't make community connections. Let's talk a little bit, maybe talk a little bit about Bradley's life and start by, you know, maybe explaining his disability a little bit so that we can not go into this with people thinking, well, he's very high functioning and that's why this can be done. There are a lot of needs there that need to be addressed, right?
Well, that's a really interesting perspective, because I think, you know, people meet Bradley and think he's just special. That's why he's, because he's in an inclusive college program right now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's not, he's darn special. Of course he is. He's my kid. But he's no more special than your kid or any other kid. He just had opportunities. And because I had the time and energy, you know, I mean, it does get complicated, right? We know that we can only beat down so many barriers because we just don't have the energy, but we've got to beat down all we can.
Mm-hmm.
And so Bradley, on paper, has a huge list. He's got hearing loss, vision loss, speech impairment, orthopedic issues, balance issues, sensory defensiveness, sensory processing issues, autism spectrum. He had a feeding tube till he was a year and a half, blah, blah, blah. Like, you read his list of things and you don't know how this person gets out of bed in the morning, but he's at college right now, like passing regular college classes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, honest to goodness, I don't know how he's doing it, but he is. And if I had limited him to only what I absolutely knew he could achieve, he wouldn't be there, right? Because I couldn't picture, how is he going to manage in the dorm by himself?
Well, let's talk about that.
He's going to do a paper? He's going to write a paper? But he is.
So what connections made that happen?
I think, so he's always been in a regular classroom. So that was very important to us from the time he was three. And this is because I had people like you and others who gave me the idea of inclusion, so that from his, at his very first IEP meeting when he was three, I had a 15-page parent input report that went into detail about, we're not closing any doors for this kid, because I'm assuming that he can have every opportunity his brother without disabilities has, and we're going to make sure that happens. So I had to fight very hard, because kids like him went into the self-contained classroom and stayed there the rest of their life, and then lived in the group home in town, which was lovely. And I didn't want that for Bradley. So I fought very hard for him to be in regular classes and having access to the regular curriculum. And I believed wholeheartedly that he needed to have all the experiences the other kids had, even to, in regular pre-K, you know, they sing all the songs, they read all the books that we all know.
Mm-hmm.
And in the special ed one, they're not doing all those things, because they're too busy. I don't know what they're too busy doing, but they're not reading Brown Bear, maybe, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, and so he was, at the same time he was in regular ed with his non-disabled peers, participating in extracurricular like band and drama and the things that were interesting to him, he was also going to camp at the school for the deaf and the school for the visually impaired, and spending time with other people who had challenges like his, because he also needed to know, how do I understand myself and exist with these challenges? You know, he needed to have an opportunity to interact with his peers with disabilities to know how to be, how do I raise a child to be an adult with disabilities when I don't know what that world is like. I used to think of it as Bradley has genetic similarities with his Kabuki syndrome siblings and peers, the same that he does with his blood brother, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so it was like he's got genetic similarities with this group of people that he didn't get from his dad and I. So it's almost like I do really well with analogies. So I kind of thought of it as if I adopted a child from another culture, I would make sure that child had access to that culture. And so I wanted to make sure he had access to this world of disability. How can he be a vital adult with disabilities? We took him out of school every year to go to the art conference with me and to learn the skills he needed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taken him time. He's 27 now. He went to some community college classes right out of high school at 18, 19, and he didn't do very well because it was difficult for him to advocate for what he needed. Mm-hmm. But he's gained maturity and self-awareness now that he can ask for what he needs. But, you know, we can't be the parent that doesn't want our kid to feel bad about their differences, so we're not going to talk to them about it. I've had to work really hard and intentional for him to understand how his experience of the world is different than other people's, so that he knows what he's missing and he knows what he needs. Does that make sense?
It does, but tangentially, I'm sure that you as well benefited from that connection to the Kabuki parent group. Because you learned from them and had other connections that maybe Bradley could utilize down the road.
Exactly. And like we had one friend in our community who's a older, maybe 5 or more years older than Bradley,
mm-hmm.
who is a really brilliant man with autism. And he is just gifted at explaining to regular old people how he experiences the world with autism. And it helped me so much to understand how Bradley might be experiencing things before Bradley could tell me himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we kind of immersed ourselves in disability culture, not just advocacy, but culture,
mm-hmm.
so that we could understand it and help him fit in as much as possible.
So talk a little bit about maybe one or two of the connections that Bradley made along the way that really helped move this concept forward for you.
I don't know if I can think of one.
Well, he got involved in drama pretty early.
Right. Well, I think, you know, this takes me to one of the tenets of person-centered thinking is finding where you belong. Right. Mm-hmm. So Bradley, like I talked to him about everything and explained what we're doing all the time. So he now knows the value of connections and he's intentional about finding the people that share his passions and connecting with them, communicating with them. So for example, he's always, since about six years old, he's been all about Broadway musicals. So, of course, he had to be involved in the theater program at his school. And when I remember his first cast party freshman year, and we're in a very rural town at the time, so I kind of knew everybody, but not that well. And the cast party was at a person's house that I didn't know. And Bradley wanted me to go with him and just, you know, go sit in the kitchen with the mom. Like, I don't know this mom. I can't just do that. So you're going to have to figure it out. And he had one best friend he was going with. But I was worried that he would sit in the corner rocking and humming, stressed out and not participating in the party. But he didn't call me to pick him up until like midnight, like when the party was ending. And it turned out they were playing Glee karaoke, and he was a rock star because all the other kids knew the songs from Glee, but he knew what Broadway show they were from, who produced it, who starred in it, what year it won a Tony, all the things.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you put him with his people and they appreciate what makes him unique. If he was with the football team, they wouldn't have found that fun. So, you know, for us, it's been finding the places that that people appreciate him and where he can shine, and also empowering him to walk into a room feeling like I'm Bradley and I'm all that. And you might know, you know, because he's got visible challenges. So when you walk into a room, people know he's got differences.
Mm-hmm.
And he needs to be able to walk in with confidence that he belongs, you know?
Right. So think about, you know, 30 years from now, and Bradley will be 57 instead of 27. And
I'll be gone.
And you may be, we all may be at that point. And so what's your hope for Bradley? And, you know, by building these connections, what's your hope for him long term?
Well, you know, now we, as you know, we developed a micro board for Bradley, a very coordinated circle of support during his school years. But then he went to a transition program and COVID happened and now he's at college and we don't have a circle anymore. So when he graduates and moves back home, we'll need to be very intentional about developing a strong circle of people around him so that I can be less and less of the center of everything.
Right.
And, you know, he used to think he wanted to live on his own. Now he knows he's going to have to live with me for a little bit just to like find his way. Right. Mm-hmm. But I do hope that he'll live on his own, whether that's with a roommate or whatever, just on his own, meaning not with his mother.
Right. Right. So it could be a roommate. It could be some kind of a shared living situation, but I'm thinking that Bradley does not want to live in a group home.
No, he does not.
And that seems to be like the ultimate solution for so many families out there. And it's not easy. It's not a given that it's going to be a great situation.
Right. Because there's too many restrictions, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we've been raising our kid in an inclusive life, inclusive education and inclusive life, and then all of a sudden we put him in a restricted adult living situation where we have to take showers on a schedule because we just do logistically. It doesn't work if everyone just does whatever they want when they want to. And we have a meal schedule and stuff. For some people, they might like that routine.
Mm-hmm.
But Bradley might like the routine, actually, but he wouldn't like the limitations.
Yeah, I could see him going crazy over the limitations that would be imposed on him in that situation. Oh, Michelle, we are out of time, I'm afraid.
I thought that might happen.
You knew it would. Yeah. But, you know, I'll bring you back another time. We'll catch up on what Bradley's doing and how it's going and give us more of your perspective, because I think it's really a really, really progressive one that I think people appreciate. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Good to talk to you.
Always Thanks good talking with you. Michelle Westmus, parent, Thanks. Advocate, and just all around great person. Thanks for being on the show today.
You too. Thanks, Vicki. Bye-bye.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week. No, I'm staying.